views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Did you know that 530,000 new businesses are created each month in the United States? That's according to the Kauffman Foundation. And unfortunately, 90% of them will end up failing, according to Forbes. So those are not very good statistics. Great statistics on the 530,000 per month, but the 90% makes it, you know, a little daunting. But since so many start, and the numbers mean that 10% of so many means there are a lot of successful businesses that are starting around the country. And what I do is I teach a class at the University of Minnesota at the Carlson School in entrepreneurship, and I just love it. I work with these young kids, and their minds are so open, and they haven't been daunted and shut off by the world yet. And so they think that almost anything is possible. And it's so fun working with these kids. And as such, I am doing a show today on entrepreneurship, and I have some amazing people that I will be talking to today. But before I get into that, I want to talk about some stats about startups, which are pretty interesting. First, I have this thing called this study from the Founder Institute, and they looked at 15,000 business owners to find out what the keys of startup success is. And they found 4 common markers, and they think it's within 85% accuracy. So here's what they found looking at 15,000 different people. They found that the average starting age of a successful entrepreneur is 40. So, you know, no matter what people say, that all these young kids are starting companies, and they are, and it's okay, it's good, but you can be older. So there are a lot of people in their 50s and 60s starting companies. For the age to be 40, you see a whole spread of people starting companies. Also, less than 1% of successful entrepreneurs come from extremely rich or extremely poor backgrounds, meaning they come from all walks of life. And 75.4% of successful entrepreneurs worked as employees at other companies for more than 6 years before launching their own businesses. So basically, having experience in large companies or other companies is pretty common. Well, here we go. According to Forbes, the keys to startup success is dependent upon these 4 common markers, and they're shared amongst moguls in all different business sectors. First, the majority of them have had professional experience, which matches to the 75.4% of successful entrepreneurs working at other companies for 6 years before launching their own companies. So they have professional experience. Number 2, they're creative and they have positive thinking. So you have to stay positive when you're starting a company, because starting a company is very difficult. Number 3, they have fluid intelligence, meaning they're not just stuck in one way. They can look at different problems in different ways and see things in a fluid manner. And they're flexible, and they have agreeableness, meaning they're not just stuck in their ways, and, you know, they can handle people of different backgrounds and things. And then they looked at what the unsavory traits are that can damper your startup endeavors. And here's their number 1, excuse making. You can't make excuses for things. You just have to go and get it done. Predatory aggressiveness. So the a-hole that wants to just take over somebody's business, or they want to partner up just to take somebody over, those people tend not to be successful because people don't want to work with them in the long run. Deceitfulness, same thing with predatory aggressiveness. People do not want to work with deceitful people over time. Yeah, you might be a sucker once, but word gets around and it's just not good. Emotional instability. Things are tough when starting a company, so you having emotional stability is very important. Narcissism. Same with deceitfulness and predatory aggressiveness. People don't like narcissists. They might be common in the corner offices of big companies, but when it comes to startups, other founders don't want to work with you, and narcissism tends to affect your ability to provide a quality product and service. So that's actually kind of good news that they aren't successful, I think. And here's some other things. According to the Kauffman Foundation, motivations for entrepreneurship, they say that these are the four most motivating factors, or the factors for, most motivating factors. Building wealth. People want to build wealth, which is obvious. People are looking for that startup culture. So people will go to a startup just because of the culture. Owning a company. People want to own companies. I suppose it's also tied to building wealth. Number four, capitalizing on an original business idea. Somebody has some great idea and it's burning in their gut to go do this. And then here's some last facts about startups. 51.9% of successful entrepreneurs were the first in their families to launch a business. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that is common in your business or in your family. And then 60.3% of successful entrepreneurs were driven to start their own business because standard work environments did not appeal to them. They just don't want to work at another company. The bureaucracy or whatever else, they want to do it themselves. And that's pretty common. But I am having a guy from Silicon Valley. His name is Richard Henley, and his company is, they place CEOs in Silicon Valley and elsewhere, but mostly in Silicon Valley. And they're one of the top rated companies in that area placing CEOs there. And so I'm bringing him on to talk about what it is that people are looking for a Silicon Valley CEO, somebody that can run a startup. And these are professional executive placers. You know, venture capital companies come in, they fund these startups, and they want a top-notch CEO to run it. And these guys, Richard Henley and his company, come in and they find top-notch CEOs. Now, they're not always successful at it, but most of the time they are. And that's why they're one of the top companies in Silicon Valley. And so he's going to come and tell us a little bit about what it takes to be a CEO in Silicon Valley. But before I get into that, I'm going to talk about some notable companies that were started in Silicon Valley. It's really the hub, which isn't a surprise. People know that. But listen to some of these companies. It's kind of the who's who of high-tech companies. Google started there, Hewlett-Packard, Intel, Apple, Tesla, Twitter, Facebook, Adobe Systems, eBay, Symantec, Cisco, LinkedIn, Netflix, even the Uber car company started there. Oracle. But okay, now if you're not in Silicon Valley, you don't have to fret too much. There are notable companies that have been founded outside of Silicon Valley. They maybe not have as much glitz and glamour with some of these, but they're huge companies. Microsoft, Amazon, Verizon, IBM, AT&T, Texas Instruments, Career Builder, National Instruments, Citrix Systems, Qualcomm, and Orbitz. Those companies are all started outside of Silicon Valley. So you don't have to necessarily be in Silicon Valley to have things going, but they do take the cake on having the most companies there. So if they're beating the rest of the country together, then that's a pretty good hub. But when you start looking at other industries like biotech, now still Silicon Valley takes a prize on that, but Boston, Massachusetts is not far behind. So there are other industries that are really catching up and closing that gap. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well with Richard Henley. And now I'm going to welcome him to the program. Hello, Rich. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm doing great. I know that you are an expert at finding CEOs, and especially for high-tech companies. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what the economy is like in Silicon Valley, especially or specifically towards startups. What is it like? I mean, is it still as strong as it always has been, or is the overall economy affecting it, or how's it going?
Well, I think that in the last 6 months, it's changed pretty drastically. Just because the investors who are investing in the Silicon Valley companies are much more conservative than they were 6 months ago. However, it really hasn't trickled down into how a lot of these early stage companies are hiring for one reason. Let's say a venture capital firm gave a company $20 million in December. Well, they still have that $20 million and they're still investing pretty heavily. I think what will change from a hiring perspective for a lot of these key executives is probably the third quarter of this year when they start to run out of that money and have to go back to the VCs and ask for additional funding then.
And is the overall economy, is it the recession that we're pretty much in right now that's affecting it? Or, I mean, what is going on?
I think that it's a couple of things. One is I think that with Apple and some of these really large companies not putting the positive numbers that they have had in 2015 and before, it's made a lot of investors pause as they think about investing in early stage companies. So they're just more conservative. So where they may have given one company $20 million last year, they may only give them $5 million this year.
And they're holding on to their money. They're just not investing. Is that what's going on?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of scary, isn't it? If you're a startup and that's all slowing down. Are you only focused on placing candidates in Silicon Valley or also across the country?
We do executive search all over the country. So we work with all the top VCs in around the world. And oftentimes many of these companies are in the Southeast or in the Northeast or in on the West Coast. I would say about 60% of the work that we do is based here in Silicon Valley because that's where just the majority of the early stage companies are today.
And they're still there today. I mean, it's always been sort of that, but are you seeing a migration out of there to other areas or not?
Not really. We still see that's where everyone wants to come, is specifically as it relates for technology. Everyone believes that if they're in the Midwest or the Northeast or the Southeast, that that's where the pot of gold is, because that's where, one, most of the VCs are, and two, most of the people from large companies such as Google and Facebook and Apple, where they leave to go start their own company.
So is it more an illusion, like the VCs think they're all there so that everybody goes there and it's kind of that culture? You know, they have a reputation of being there, so that's what everybody does. And if you're from another part of the area, another part of the country, it's just that much harder to get funding.
It is. I think that many of the VCs believe that the solar system all revolves around Palo Alto. And they, for some reason, just don't take a lot of these other companies outside of the area seriously as they do as one that they can go visit in Palo Alto.
Oh, that's interesting. Even if they could be a lot better. So it's,
sure,
it's all perspective. So do you have, or do you see a shortage for quality CEO candidates for high tech companies?
There's always a shortage. The unemployment rate for a really good leader like that is zero.
Or so, negative.
Yeah. Because oftentimes these people are getting, you know, two calls a week for the next opportunity. And everyone who's really good has a job.
So do you think it's still that reputation thing? I mean, there are other types of people that probably could be really good. It's just it's a stereotype type person everybody's looking for. You know, the young male guy that's, you know, I mean, is it pretty much a stereotypical placement?
I think that companies are just more and more conservative about what they're looking for today, and they're less willing to take a chance on somebody. So oftentimes when we're doing a CEO search for an early stage company, when we're talking to the board of directors for that company, they want someone who has been in their industry, has been a CEO, and has done exactly what they're trying to do at least 2 to 3 times in their career. So there's no doubt in their mind that this person will be successful because they've done it 3 or 4 times already. Well, if you think about it, that's just a handful of people all around the world that could actually do that.
Oh, yeah.
But
they have to self-fund at the beginning. You have to be successful a couple times on your own, and then suddenly everybody starts going after you.
Exactly.
Okay, so do you look for a different type of candidate for a CEO of a high-tech startup versus a larger, more established company? Do you do CEO placements for just startups, or do you also do it for a company that's been around for a while that's becoming established?
Yeah, I mean, we'll do it for companies with revenue of $1 million to $5 billion. So the makeup of that executive is pretty much the same. The difference is the experience that they've had and kind of where they've been in their life and what they've done. So
basically it's you think it's the same, that it doesn't take different skill sets to do a high tech startup versus doing a major large bureaucratic company?
Well, it's interesting because many times when we're doing early stage CEO executive search work, people from very large companies, billion-dollar businesses, will say, you know what? Well, I work in a very entrepreneurial division of this billion-dollar business, so I am so qualified to become a CEO for an early stage company. Well, the problem with that is that they just don't oftentimes understand all the resources that are around them. So when they get there on the first day, they're like, well, where's my executive assistant? And where's the person that gets me coffee? And where's my team of marketing people? And where's my $20 million that I've got to spend on SEO marketing?
Yeah, they have to be ready to be really scrappy.
Yeah, you've got to roll up your sleeves and be cook and bottle washer all at once. And for most people who are already in really big companies, it's too much of a departure from what they're comfortable with. So what we typically do is that we don't discriminate against people with big company experience, but chances are if they've had big company experience and then gone to an early stage company and been successful, then we understand that they know what it is that they're going to have to do to be successful in that job.
Okay, so they can bridge that divide. It's just you need to see a past success already.
Right. No one wants to take a gamble on someone's ability that they think they can do the job. They want to know they can do it.
Well, and there's a problem the other direction, too. It's hard to build a large company if you've never been in a large company. It's hard to see that huge opportunity. So I suppose you get small thinking if you really haven't been exposed to large things as well, right? I mean, it goes the different direction as well.
Exactly. And what you want is someone with cross-functional experience in early and later stage companies so they can pull from their experience in both organizations to make them so successful where they're going.
Well, do you look for candidates all over the country and world, or do you like to look for candidates inside Silicon Valley?
No, we look for the best people no matter where they are in the country. So, and that's usually the standpoint of the company as well. They don't care where they live or where they're from or what their background is. They just want the best person.
Well, what happens if somebody's failed at a previous opportunity? Does that pretty much eliminate them?
Actually not. That's actually a positive. Because I think Benjamin Franklin once said, failure has, no authors, but success has 1,000. So chances are in a company, if it's been really successful for the iPad, for example, there's probably 30 different people at Apple taking credit for the iPad when it was actually one person's idea.
Yes.
Exactly. So,
exactly,
so if you think about it, a lot of people learn from failure. And it's what you do from that experience and how you rectify what you're not going to do next is really important to investors, to boards of directors, and other people that are investing in your business model. So if you've never failed, then you're probably not a candidate that a lot of these boards of directors are interested in, because chances are in a new organization, in a new startup, in an early stage company, there's lots of failure all day long, and you've got to learn how to deal with it and how to motivate a team around that.
Well, and I think you can't learn some of these real valuable lessons without failing. You know, I mean, failure is the way you really learn in a lot of cases, unfortunately. Right?
Right. Exactly.
And and you don't want to wish some of the things that I just know, some of the things that I've gone through, I don't want to wish that on my worst enemy. Well, maybe. But, you know, it was awful. But I don't think I would have learned some of those things without that. And without that, you just walk in blind. You walk into a pothole not even knowing you're walking into it.
Exactly.
Okay. What are the opportunities that now exist out there? Are you seeing certain trends?
We are. In fact, one of the probably the biggest trends out there is health technology. And that's kind of the intersection between technology and healthcare. Because if you think about healthcare in general, it's just a big behemoth that really hasn't changed for 100 years. And there are so many new innovative companies out there today that are thinking about different ways to make you healthier, have your experience better with your physician, have your experience better with your hospital. All of these different technologies that literally 5 years ago didn't exist at all and are all about to blossom.
Well, and that will really probably cut costs in the whole healthcare system as people start competing.
Exactly. And it's really kind of the worst nightmare for a lot of these really big healthcare companies.
Oh, I'm sure.
because they, I mean, it's a monopoly for them and they own so much of the market. So a lot of these really smart disruptive companies are saying, well, why have we done it this way for the past 50 years? Isn't there a new way to do it? And I think it scares a lot of big companies out there today.
Well, but we need it so desperately. I mean, we have such a mess going on in the healthcare industry. Are you seeing, from a science standpoint, there's so many cool things that you can do is when you start integrating science and health, you know, high tech and health, robotics and healthcare. It's amazing. Not just automating processes, right? Which is another way that you're seeing, but also when you integrate high tech tools and things in your own body. Are you seeing a lot of that?
Yeah, and we're also seeing kind of the interface of how people deal with care, whether that's through their hospital, whether that's through their physician, because there's so many big data trends now that really allow for a much more seamless experience than most people are seeing today, which can be a really frustrating experience when you have to deal with your physician or your drug company or all of your rehab person for your leg, all these different things that are just making a much smoother process.
So are you seeing the ability for people to take more control over their own healthcare?
Exactly, because no one's closer to it than you are.
What about the high-tech stuff as far as, because that's more process-oriented, you know, how to, and that's using the databases, really getting that whole environment automated. My sister's a pharmacist and my other sister's a doctor. Mm-hmm. And my pharmacist sister always talks about how things are just so antiquated. You know, it just, things, people die just because they are given the wrong drugs. And, you know, a lot of the, they're starting to automate prescriptions and things, but doctors don't know when, you know, how the drugs all interact with each other, but the pharmacists do. And,
right.
And so that whole, you know, problem, but you know, that's, you know, taking the tools and technology that we've had for the last 20 years and starting to apply it to healthcare and, you know, them getting out of the dark ages. But what about all these cool advances as far as being able to directly connect to your brain and things like that and really integrating machinery to a person's body? Are you seeing any of that stuff?
That is more on the biomedical side, which we don't do a lot of work because that's a really specialized industry. But it's certainly a growing one.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
I just had someone talk about how this scientist is working to alter your, and I don't know if I like this or not, but make you think that vegetables are ice cream so they can get children to eat their vegetables. And it's actually, they're making huge progress on that. And it's kind of scary in some ways and it's kind of cool in other ways in the sense of what we can actually do with our bodies. We have to be careful because we've done a lot of stupid things over the last 100 years as far as we think it's good for us and it ends up creating a multitude of problems. But
well, once they get that finalized, they should send that so I can give it to my kids for sure.
Exactly. My kids are past that now, but man, that would have been really good to have.
Right.
So where do you see the future in general going when it comes to venture capital and placing leadership and so forth?
I think that there is just less room for error today and in the future than there was in the past. And in the past, you really could say to a potential board member or a VC, you know what, this person's really sharp. They've got experience, maybe not in a totally related industry, but we think they've got the ability to take this to the next level. Today, and as far as I can see in the future, VCs and investors just aren't willing to make that risk with someone's background like they used to. Even though that person could do a great job that
and better maybe.
Yeah, they just are getting more and more conservative as it relates to that.
We have to take a short break and we'll be back with Richard Henley in a moment.
Hi everyone, this is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the Maca Team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing. All of the products are always organically grown, fair-traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation. But did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Badili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Pat. I am so thrilled. I've had the honor of working with Leslie Fontaine for the past year or so, and what she has created in her hit program, Sheer Alchemy, transcends what most of us get to listen to or hear in any point in time in our lives. But beyond that, Leslie is working with people all over the world, and she has created something phenomenal based on the feedback and input from the Archangels, from the Ascended Masters, from the light beings, and most importantly, from each and every one of you. So if you want to change your life, if you're ready to step into your own version of Sheer Alchemy, please give Leslie a call at 678-665-3366. And why? Because this is what you're going to be prepared to do. Be amazed, and on your part, connect with the Ascended Masters that are there to help you custom make the life that you are meant to live.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
And we are back. This is Sarah Westall with Business Game Changers. And we're talking to Richard Henley about executive CEO placement in Silicon Valley startup companies. And if you want to find more information on his company, which is LGS Executive Search, you can find that on my website at sarahwestall.com. And you can also find other information on other past shows and episodes and also provide comments there as well. So now let's rejoin Richard Henley.
So we're on that pendulum swing, I think, because that's happening with employees as well. Companies are looking for the exact right employee. I know that, you know, a couple decades ago, they were looking for the people with the right abilities, and then they figured they could take the right person and mold them into what they want. And now companies are just looking for the exact person. But do you see that as eventually going to be a problem? Because how do we develop new people if we're already just, you know, we're only looking for the people that are around now?
I think it's going to be tougher for someone without specific experience in that industry to break in. And it's really going to have to have them focus on their network to convince some of these people that they are the right fit for that, for them to even get a shot in the future.
They're going to have a progression plan maybe, right? Start as like an executive. Now, do you ever take like a VP and place them as a CEO because they just had great experience there?
One of the things that we try and do is show all of our clients a broad range of folks. So here is someone who's absolutely perfect for the role. Here's someone who's probably a little overqualified for the role. And here is a couple of people who are young up and comers that we think you should really look at that have some great potential. And so what it allows for is it allows the client to really look through a full kind of smorgasbord of people. So they're not always looking at the exact same type of person, because sometimes every once in a while they're like, you know what? I want to take a bet on that young up and comer, and I believe in what they can do for this business, and they'll make a shot to our decision to hire that person. So.
Oh, so that's if they have more of an open-minded investment community. And so it kind of goes all across the board, right? And it kind of varies. If they've been burned by an old timer, then maybe they'll give a young timer a shot. It's kind of where they are mentally, like anything else in life.
Right. Exactly.
Well, how can people learn more about your company? Are you always, like, let's say somebody really thinks that they're a fit for doing this. Can they reach out to you, or how do you go about
it? Of course. I will always talk to somebody if they want to reach out, because you never know. I may not have a search that's perfect for them today, but 2 weeks from then, I might have the exact perfect search for somebody. So we're in a people business, and I just love talking to people, so they can always reach out to me.
Was this something that you want to do eventually, run a company? You run your own company right now, but I mean, do you ever want to run one of these?
I've done it before, so I've started a company from scratch and sold it. So that was enough gray hair for me. Now
you don't want to do it again?
No, thanks.
Well, I know you're running a company now, but I mean, You know, one of those. Yeah, it's like you're in a pressure cooker all day long, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It's intense. So, how can people learn more about your company?
They can come to our website, which is www.lges.com. It's got a list of our full partners, our practices, the searches that we've done, and it's got all of our contact information on there as well.
Excellent. And I'll put that on my radio page as well, so people can reach it there. So thank you so much, Richard, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Sarah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
After that engaging conversation on CEOs in Silicon Valley, we are now going to take a trip to the opposite side of the country and talk to Barry Strauber on co-working. He has a wonderful facility out of New York, and they have a co-working 60,000 square foot facility where entrepreneurs and business people come together and they share ideas and creativity, and it's a hub of activity. And a lot of co-working environments that they've tried to do over the years have not worked. But this one is thriving, and they're flourishing, and they're an anomaly. So what is making this work? And he's going to share with us all that and what it is. And so let's welcome Barry Strauber to the program.
Hi, Barry. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, you have this interesting thing cooking out there in New York called co-working. What is that?
Yeah. Well, actually, to be truthful, it's been around for a while, probably since maybe 2007, 2008. But I think what's happened in the last couple of years, it's sort of come into its own and started to become really a global idea of what business is. But basically what it is instead of thinking in the more traditional sense of having a company go into a building and own that space, you know, just primarily be the inhabitant of that space, what this is saying is there's a genuine advantage and I would say supportive sort of atmosphere idea of being in a space with a lot of other people doing a lot of other things, close proximity, so as to create sort of a community of different types of people working within the same space, different companies, different types of work,
kind of
but having that physically
thinking,
in the same.
Right? You just,
yeah,
you're,
I mean, I,
you're forced
yeah, I
into
think,
more of a creative,
you know, I think
environment.
Right. I mean, I think the advantage, you know, more like when you just sort of think about it, is you know, just that sort of obvious thing that it gets you to think about other stuff, because literally you're side by side with people who are doing things that could be entirely different, but still there might be a sort of somehow a sense of like something that could help you with what you're doing.
Well, I noticed that when people work when you work in a company, everybody gets company brain, kind of like everybody thinks
right.
the same. And when you're in a dynamic
right.
environment like that, you can't get company brain.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I remember working in traditional offices where they were just very like, they were understanding that, you know, don't give away anything to anybody else and don't tell anybody else what we're doing and never show people anything that we've done and be really careful about, you know, just keeping everything close to your vest about what we're doing. When now I work in a place with 60 companies where everyone is showing everyone else essentially everything they're doing, because there's a sense of an interconnection, there's a sense that you might learn something by sharing.
Oh, think, interesting. That's a major different paradigm.
Yeah. The fact, you know, I think, and also just a basic component, a basic principle of this idea of competition is sort of, you know, for me, that I've seen up close and I've seen in successful co-working places doesn't really exist anymore, because the idea is that the overpowering, much more positive aspect of co-working that outweighs the negative completely is that you're constantly learning, and by sharing, the more you share, the more it comes back. It's sort of this great ROI, this great return on investment of, if I get involved in this community and I'm true to the intention, which is I'll learn as much as I can give out, then it makes it into this sort of really nice relationship between people that work at these places, when in the old days there was so much effort putting into being afraid that you might give away something.
So do you think
that, you know, now you look back and think that was sort of a wasted emotion.
Well, co-working, like you said, it's been around since 2007, but it really hasn't worked. But you guys are working.
Right.
More of a change of paradigm on how you're thinking about it, and maybe at that time it just wasn't the right time. People just couldn't embrace being open, and now they're more, is that it?
Yeah. Well, I think for a couple of reasons, but I think it's probably because there was just a period of time that it was a learning curve. It was like, how am I going to do this? Literally sitting next to people who might be even in the same profession, who might even be doing the same sort of, you know, category of what I'm trying to do. It just seemed very odd that I would want to share things with them. But I think it just took some time, and it took some sort of trial and error, and have people sort of see the reality of the situation. And I think they just like it. And I think the generation coming up, you know, notoriously the millennials coming up, everybody talks about, they sort of see it as a beneficial, because they're all into the sharing economy anyway.
That's how they grew up.
Everything is
way more than
that. Yeah, they just sort of, yeah, they live in the digital world. They were born into the internet. The kids in college now, you know, they don't know any other way, and they sort of just accept the fact that this is great. We're all in this thing together, and we're all trying to figure this out. And I think they accept also the fact that the acceleration of technology is so fast and so broad that there's no way that they can know everything. So they really sort of need other people to sort of help them along the way. And we always felt, you know, we'll handle this. We can do this. We'll figure everything out. And now the world is so complicated and so broad and all its stuff that there's no way that you would know everything. So here's a way that you can go to places, in the case of co-working. Hello?
Yeah. You're still here.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can go to places. Oh, good. You can go to places instead of, you know, rather than co-working, and you can actually, or you know, in co-working spaces, you can have this, you know, like ecosystem support that you wouldn't have been able to find anywhere else. To go to a place that has, like our place, you know, or, you know, places like that have a really good amount of cross-section of different types of people, where would you find that? There wouldn't have been a place to find that years ago. But now you have these places that are the ones that are successful, that are great, like, support and resource.
Well, and they're all, people are all doing different things. And so you realize that what you're doing might not be the most important thing on the planet. And that you can learn things from others. Is this really
beneficial?
Yeah, I'd love to learn more. You're better when you get more input. Now, how is this really beneficial to entrepreneurs?
You know, it really is. You know, what's interesting that you might find real interesting is that, of course, in big cities, there's a lot of opportunity. New York City is, you know, a hub of, you know, everything going on, and L.A. and all these big cities in the United States. But, you know, for my example, I'm in Rochester, New York, not unlike a lot of other medium-sized cities in the world. They don't have a lot of places within those cities where if you're a person who's in that city and you have a dream and you have something that you love and you really want to do it, and, you know, starting your business is hard and you're really not quite sure where to go to get that support, these places become that support. These places become the place that you can go to and say, I'm going to come into this community because all you guys are like-minded people who are trying to do the same thing, start your own businesses, and I'm going to come in here and see if I can do it. You know, and you guys are going to help me get to that point. I'm in a city that's doing that, and I know of other cities around Buffalo and upstate New York and other cities that I've heard across the country. These are the type of places that become then that place that becomes the system where someone can come in and just, they're looking to see if there's a possibility. They have this passion for something and they want to do it. Where else do they go? You know, there isn't all those opportunities that are in the big city.
But it's not an incubator though, right? How does that differ then from an incubator?
That's a good question, because I think people misconstrue that. I think incubators are, if you are a small company that wants to succeed and get bigger, and you want to create something that has a formidable foundation, then you want to just work on it. And you go into this sort of isolated place where you're given business knowledge and you're instructed on strategic plans and how to put your business plan together. And you're sort of in a focused environment where you can do that. Co-working is all about just you wanting to start your own thing and going into this big ecosystem.
You're not as directed. It's more of a free-flowing thing, right? You're not as directed.
Yeah,
you're still on your
right.
own.
It's very much a specific, like, oh, this is your business and you want to grow it and you want to do something with it. So we're going to bring you into a place and try to help you do that. Rather than in a co-working space, so you're coming into a place where there's a lot of possibilities and you want to look and see what you can do. You're a person who feels that you've got that entrepreneurial spirit inside of you, but you really have a lot of questions and there's a lot of things that you still need to learn. And this becomes that sort of community that will help you, you know, learn things and start to grow a little bit and become successful personally, but
does it helps them become more profitable and more successful? I mean, you've seen that your first thing, because you have a successful one going on. So is that the pattern that you're seeing, is just companies getting off the ground? Yeah, the companies getting off the ground quicker, entrepreneurs, you know, their companies working better, becoming more profitable?
You know, the thing with co-working spaces and with being able to do this well is you have to really fulfill the intention, which is you have to create a membership. You have to create a really amazing culture. It's like going into a company that has a really great culture because everyone's bought into that mission. And in the case of co-working spaces, that's the same thing. If you just look at it as a space, that's sort of a commodity. Everybody can sort of rent out space in a lot of different places. If you look at co-working as a place to get help and for everyone to sort of understand that part of their membership in that place is to be responsible for doing that, then you've got something really interesting, just like you do when you have a company that has an amazing culture.
So with a co-working space, you need a champion of it, somebody who kind of runs it?
You do, and that's, in this case, that's sort of me in Rochester. But you do, you need to sort of have probably a small group of people who see the beauty of it, you know,
and kind of nurture it and keep it going. And
yeah, and have a heart for the idea that, that the world does need this. You know, entrepreneurialism, especially, again, like in cities like where I am or in cities across the country, the business landscape changes. This is a tough world in terms of being successful in business. So if you're not constantly trying to reinvent and come up with new ideas for that business landscape, you're probably not doing the right thing. So these kind of places, I think, are becoming more popular because they're actually helping that.
Well, do you think it kind of narrows the gap? It narrows the gap between places that are hotbeds of entrepreneur, like Silicon Valley, and it takes away that gap and creates more of an atmosphere where you can be just as successful there versus, I mean, I don't know.
I think it makes it on a more even starting point, because, you know, this in every city, there's amazing people. And I think frankly, what happens is a lot of people take sort of the easier route. I mean, if you look at statistics, starting your own business or being an entrepreneur is not easy. And
no,
I think a lot of people fail at it. But if this sort of creates more of a chance for you to succeed, because now you've got some support system that you can go to, and there are places now that you can, you can find help and you can be in an environment that's going to make your chances a lot better of doing well, then that's going to help everybody. That's going to help the cities who need more young businesses coming up, and it's going to help
How has technology allowed it to work?
It's because literally you can connect with anyone all over the world. It's really interesting with technology because I think my generation had a hard time understanding that, you know, they were sort of holding on to the traditional meetings that would happen in person and those type of things. When really you need to understand that technology allows you to meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime in the entire world, and you just have to understand that it's through technology that you'll be doing that. But it's amazing how, you know, once you start to let that go and you feel comfortable about the fact that you're just letting these great, awesome technology platforms help you connect, it's not hard to do, and you become, you know, much more capable, and you can live anywhere, and you can essentially do anything, and it opens up all these possibilities. So it's
interesting
great.
Because, you know, people have been talking about co-working spaces for a long time, and it doesn't work because of the culture needs to change.
Right.
And when you create the right culture, now you can see it working. And it's a great test area.
It's interesting because I think it took a while to get people's heads out of the traditional thing, but still I get a lot of feedback from people who still are in the traditional models or saying, oh no, you know, it's always going to stay this way. We're never going to go towards that. That's too relaxed. That's too inclusive. There's too many people. You know, that
doesn't
work.
Everyone.
But it's going to work. It's not for everyone, but I think it's the future. I'm pretty convinced now that it's never going to go back to a more traditional. I think it's going to continue to accelerate and continue to be in more places. But I think the traditional will never completely go away. But I think they will then, like I said before, they'll probably take some of the people that work for them and have them be in places like this. Because it just makes more sense to, you know, that virtual reality thing. You know, the virtual idea that you can be in other places and not really have to be
literally
in someone's building to do the work.
I love it because you're actually a proven concept. You know, instead of everybody saying it's not going to work, well, it does.
Right.
It can work, and you guys are an example of that. Well, how can people learn more about what you're doing and you know, maybe set one up in their own community or learn what you're doing?
If anyone wants to contact me, we have our website. We have www.carlsoncowork.com. So that's carlsoncowork.com. They can go to the website. They can find my information on there, Barry Strauber, and they can contact me that way. Or they can just go online, go to my I have my marketing company, Rising, which is a great LinkedIn profile that they can go to. They can find me there, and they can.
You guys have a YouTube series too that talks about it, right?
We do. So, yep. If you go online, if you go on YouTube, and it's Carlson Cowork Conversations. Episode 1. Episode 2 was shot. So we are coming out with that pretty soon. And that again, that's a great sort of, you know, a really perfect tactic coming out of co-working, which is our whole philosophy is that we want entrepreneurs and we want to encourage and support them. And this web series that we started doing now is lifting them up and actually interviewing them and asking them all the questions that actually that might actually inspire young potential entrepreneurs coming up. So it's just sort of, you know, looking at them as a unique, interesting sort of group and trying to not only help them but also have them help inspire future generations.
Oh, I love it. I love
people.
Just kind of taking the walls down and saying, let's do something different. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you joining the program today, and I'll have your information up on the radio page, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Well, if you are interested in starting a company, I hope you take advice from the show today. But I also hope that anything that you hear isn't daunting and it doesn't steer you away from starting a company, because everybody's quest and everybody's path is different on when they go about making their company dreams come true. But one thing is that it's a ton of work. So be ready to work really hard and get your hands dirty and go forward and do what you can with it. But for now, I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you want for yourself. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show for women in recovery who are ready to live life on purpose. Tune in and let Catherine help you live your truth one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com
Order your copy of Dr. Friedemann Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
Shine On Radio. Find Your Shine with Kelly is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.